Hello and welcome to show number 390 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, this is Ed and welcome back to the show. On this week's show, it's a blast from the past. That's why I'm kind of starting out before the music. This is one of our favorite shows from way back, show number 43. We had Steve Barrett, the Hidden Mickey guy, on, and it was a great interview, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So without further ado, this was Jimmy and myself from a long time ago. Enjoy. Take it away, guys.
The spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the Magic Worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 43 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Welcome back again this week, guys, and we've got a really big surprise for you. Jimmy and I had the opportunity to interview Steve Barrett of Hidden Mickey fame. So here we go with our interview with Steve Barrett. And we're going to learn everything there is about the Hidden Mickey. So here we go. Well, Jimmy and I are really happy to let you know that tonight we have a very special guest, somebody who brought the term Hidden Mickey to our Disney Nerds vocabulary. We'd like to welcome Steve Barrett. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show with us. I can't tell you how much Hidden Mickeys have changed the way we tour Walt Disney World.
Yeah, well, you know what? I hear that a lot, and Hidden Mickeys does add a layer of fun and enjoyment to a visit to a Disney park. You know, and Disney didn't create Hidden Mickeys on purpose, at least Disney management I'm talking about. However, the science and art and fun of finding Hidden Mickeys and the fact that the Imagineers and cast members put them in periodically has just multiplied over the years to the point that it's just a fun game and guests know about it. And it's a fun thing to do when you're in the parks, especially if you're a repeat visitor.
Being able to keep ourselves busy at the parks is so cool. And looking for Hidden Mickeys definitely keeps us busy. Before we really get into the interview and start talking about Hidden Mickeys, Steve, one of the things we like to ask our guests is, how did you get involved with Disney? Like, what was that thing that kind of turned you on to the whole Walt Disney World experience or Walt Disney himself?
Where'd your Disney nerdiness come from, if you will?
I didn't know I was a Disney nerd at all. In fact, I really wasn't a theme park fan. And one eventful trip that I took was to a meeting in Orlando, a business meeting. And my wife and son came along with me to this meeting, and she bought some books because she knew that Disney World was in Orlando. And so she thought, well, let's just take a look at Disney World while we're there. So she, on the plane ride over from Houston, Texas, actually it was the plane ride was from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. That's where we lived at the time. On the plane ride, I read Bob Selinger's Unofficial Guide, because that she knew I was kind of a scientist type, and she thought that would be a good book for you. And she and my son, who was young at the time, read Burnbound because it had a lot of pictures, photos. Sure. So by the time we landed in Orlando, I had read Selinger's book, and I was filled with excitement. And I felt like I had discovered this place and this phenomenon that I had no clue about before. So we landed in Orlando. We were staying at the Hilton on the Hotel Plaza Boulevard near downtown Disney, and my first step onto Disney Park property, I just fell in love. I fell in love with the whole concept of the Disney parks, and it just blew me away what I was experiencing. I had no idea that theme parks could be so, this much fun. So after that trip, I started reading everything I could about Walt Disney and Disney and the Disney Company and Disney World and Disneyland and everything I could find. And I became a Disney nerd at that time. It just took one trip for me to experience it, and I fell in love with it, and it hasn't stopped for me. I live in Orlando, and I go once a week to Disney World, and I just don't get tired of it. It's just continual fun for me.
Wow, once a week. That's incredible.
Yes. Yes.
That's a fantastic story, and it makes me wonder, you know, how many people are out there that honestly think of Disney World as just another park, just another theme park, and really just have no idea until you walk in there and see the attention to detail and the backstories and all the great things there are to discover there.
Well, when I'm on property, I'm aware that there are people who don't appreciate what Walt Disney has started and what Disney World is and the Disney parks have become. And a lot of it has to do with they haven't planned properly. They don't know what they're getting into. And they become frustrated very soon in their visit because of waiting in lines or the heat, and they don't know what decisions to make. And so I feel myself wanting to, you know, help those people. You know, right. Give them advice. You know, look, this can be a lot of fun if you make the right decisions and you go about this the right way. You can have the time of your life every time you come.
I think as Disney nerds, we almost all find ourselves in those situations where you meet someone who's gone and maybe not had the best trip because they didn't plan it properly, or right. You know. So I think as we all find ourselves kind of trying to sell people, look, if you slow down a little bit and you pay attention to some of these details, you can really get a lot more out of a trip there.
You're absolutely right, and I see that almost every time I visit.
Well, that's so very true. We always want to try to help some people find some better times because we know that they're available down there.
Yeah, there's something for everybody at Disney World. And one of my, or any Disney property, but one of my favorite experiences that I still look forward to and I still love is being on property with a first-time visitor. And I would say 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to experience that when some of my relatives from Texas came and they brought their 6-year-old little boy who was foaming at the mouth. He couldn't wait to come to Disney because he'd been watching the Disney TV channels and TV shows, and he knew the characters and the Pixar movies. So he couldn't wait. And sure enough, the whole trip was just a dream for him. And I experienced it with him. And through him, his mother, you know, got the same kind of involvement. So that's really one of my really favorite things to do in life is to walk onto Disney World or Disneyland property with somebody who has never been.
And
you're able to show them, you know, the magnificence of the fun and experience that lies ahead.
I think that's so true, Steve, and I think it's even better. I mean, I enjoyed that as well, taking people onto property who have never been, and I think it's even better when it's a child and just getting to see that the expressions on their face. You know, it's really fantastic. It makes my trip that much better when I can go with a child or just anyone who's never been.
I agree, and I don't think I will ever tire of that. It's just magical. That's the best adjective for it. It's something you never forget.
So very true. And one of the things that kind of make that experience that much enjoyable are the hidden Mickeys that we look for. Now, before we go any further, Steve, tell us what a hidden Mickey is. Give us the official quote-unquote definition.
A hidden Mickey is usually Mickey Mouse, almost always, but there are other hidden characters that Disney hides. But it is an image of Mickey or another character that the artist, Imagineer, the painter, whoever's creating the detail of the property, they hide that image in the detail. And Disney doesn't tell you where these hidden Mickeys are. That's the really amazing thing about this game, because Imagineers will write me periodically and they'll say, "Steve, I'm putting this hidden Mickey in the new update on the Grand Floridian Villas, or the rooms at Wilderness Lodge. Now you can't talk about it, because you can't use me as the source, but I want you to look for it because it's going to be there, and you take your own photos." And that's the way they do it. They put these images in there, and Imagineers tell me, by the way, that when they have planning sessions for attraction updates or for new attractions or for revamping shops or hotels or whatever, the subject of hidden Mickeys does come up periodically. And the Imagineer or the manager of the property will instruct the painter or the tile worker or whoever they're talking with, "Hey, put a hidden Mickey over here, and make it subtle, and they'll do it, and that'll be the end of it." And so there's not, they don't make a list. They don't even necessarily remember that they did it. So they just wait for people to find them. So that's the fun part of this game. And new hidden Mickeys appear at a certain rate. I find people write me all the time, by the way, email me every day, people looking for hidden Mickeys. And I find maybe one or two a month at Disney World, new ones. Now most hidden Mickeys, and you ask what they are, most hidden Mickeys are the three circle variety. The head, the circle head, and the two ears on top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of the universal Mickey symbol that we all know.
Right.
Now, there are more elaborate hidden Mickeys, such as sometimes you'll see not only that three circle, but you'll see a smile there or his eyes. And so that's more of a face Mickey. Or sometimes it'll be a side profile. He's looking to the left or right, and that'll be a side profile Mickey. Sometimes it'll be his whole body, or part of his torso and neck and head. So the artists can have a lot of fun with this to make a hidden Mickey. But yeah, I would say that the vast majority of them are the three circle variety, and that's fine. I mean, I love the three circle, what we call the classic hidden Mickey. Mm-hmm. And I look for them everywhere, so do many people. And by the way, hidden Mickey started, the story goes, they started when Epcot was being built. And this was back in the, late 70s. And Walt Disney had envisioned Epcot to be an adult park. And the Magic Kingdom was already there. It opened in the early 70s, 1971. So Disney management didn't want, they didn't want the characters to be in Epcot. Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and Pluto and that.
Mm-hmm.
So in kind of a silent protest, the Imagineers started hiding Mickey in the Epcot pavilions and the World Showcase. And so during the 80s, people started seeing those images. You know, they would walk through a pavilion or a World Showcase, and they would see the detail, the fantastic detail that we've talked about that Disney creates, and they would see a three-circle Mickey image hidden in the leaves or on the side of a mountain. They would think, you know, that looks like Mickey. So somebody used the term hidden Mickey in the late 1980s, and during the 90s, that, you know, the whole concept sort of grew until what it is today, which is it's expected. I mean, when New Fantasyland opened in the Magic Kingdom, we knew there were going to be fabulous new hidden Mickeys there.
Right.
I mean, Imagineers were talking about it. So, you know, it's a full-fledged
art
sport now. And you know, it's just so much fun to look for these things.
Well, that's what's so great about opening the new lands or new attractions is that you try to get down there and be the first to find some of these hidden Mickeys. We love looking for those.
Oh, and it's amazing to me that there are new ones that are out there that nobody's found yet. That's what I love about this.
Right, right. Sure. That's the best part, getting back to try to find those.
Right, yep. And people are sending me images that I have never seen before or heard of, and nobody's told me about, no Imagineer or cast members told me about, but yet there it is. So sometimes the hidden Mickeys are so well placed and so well hidden by the artists that they may not be found for a year or two. So it's just it's wonderful.
How do you draw the line on what actually is a hidden Mickey versus something? You know, I mean, I look at things like if you have a stack of logs, well, there's so many circles there that eventually you're going to find three that could be arranged to, you could make a Mickey out of it. So where do you draw the line to say this is or this isn't it done intentionally or this, you know, it is a hidden Mickey?
Well, of course, I've wrestled with that concept for years. My first Hidden Mickey's Walt Disney World book came out in 2003. So, and every other year, my publisher and I update these books. So, and every year we wrestle with, okay, what are we going to count as a Hidden Mickey to put in the book? And, you know, we try to use rules, especially for the three-circle variety.
Sure.
I mean, as you might imagine, if all the circles are equal size, that doesn't really look like Mickey. I mean, his ears are not the same size as his head. So, you know, that's a simple rule that we use. The head and ears need to be proportioned properly. And, okay, you know, the ears need to be sort of above the head and ideally touching the head, but, you know, at least close to the head. So, unfortunately, you know, again, I mentioned earlier, Disney does not keep an official list, so we don't know what's official or not. And sure, most hidden Mickeys, and the Imagineers and cast members, the Imagineers and managers don't write to me and say, this is official. You know, there's only a very few that they've contacted me that they say, well, okay, this is an official one, so, you know, be aware. 95% of the hidden Mickeys are our best guess.
Because it's kind of what their intent was.
Right. And so, you know, if you come across one like in Africa and in the animal kingdom, outside of the Tamu Tamu refreshments, there's a utility cover and there's a set of pebbles that make the ears on each side of the utility cover above the cover, which is the head.
Mm-hmm.
That is clearly Mickey. And so you look at that thing and you say, oh my gosh, that is definitely, that was intentional. I mean, sometimes you get that opinion or you get that gestalt about it. You know, you see an image and you say, there's no way that's accidental. You know, right. The artist put that there on purpose. Now, again, that's not on any list, and, you know, nobody's told me about it, but it's clearly intentional. So, you know, sometimes you definitely get that impression. But on the other hand, like you mentioned, there are logs and circles and grapes and tomatoes and pumpkins everywhere. So it's like cannonballs is another good one. Which group of three makes a hidden Mickey? Well, if people write me, and especially, you know, I tell you what, if a 7-year-old kid writes me and says, "I think I found a hidden Mickey," I'm much more inclined to accept that as a hidden Mickey. I don't turn a kid down, you know.
Right, definitely.
Right. So if there's some cannonballs there, and, you know, the middle cannonball is larger than the two ones above it, okay, I may count that as a hidden Mickey.
Sure.
And more than me, anyway, by the way, I have a website, hiddenmickeyguy.com, GUI.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a questionable hidden Mickey section. And I ask people to vote on images. I just put up one today. There's a hidden Mickey lock. That's another one we debate about quite a bit, are the hidden Mickey locks all over Disney World. Well, there's a lock hanging on a gate to the left of the entrance of the Be Our Guest restaurant in the new Fantasyland. You know, and some of those locks have ears, and, you know, they may or may not be hidden Mickeys. So I just ask people to vote on them, to vote on these images. And I tell you what, the voters are just as... just as discerning as I am, I think, because whatever they vote, I accept it. And if they like it as a hidden Mickey image, then I'll put it in the book. So mm-hmm. That's kind of the way I do that now.
Well, that's a good way to do it, because it avoids a lot of the controversy, because you let people decide.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that lock, by the way, earlier.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And I tell you what, if nobody mentioned it was a hidden Mickey, to me it just looks like the regular shield lock with the little dips at the top that might... Yeah. I mean, is that what the hidden Mickey is in that? Or was it something I missed
No, the hidden Mickey is the lock itself, which is, you know, the body of the lock, which is the head.
Right.
And then two projections at the top, which form the ears.
Right.
So... You know, in the early years, back when all this started, back in the 80s and 90s, the lock on the jail cell at the end of the Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, at the end of the ride of Pirates of the Caribbean, where the, the prisoners are trying to get the dog to give them the keys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, there's a lock on the jail cell that people think, oh, that looks like Mickey. Well, that's not really a very good Mickey to me, and most people vote it down. But there are locks that look a little more convincing if the prominences above the central circle of the lock, you know, look more like ears. Well, maybe that is a hidden Mickey. I don't know. You know, you can argue that no lock is really a hidden Mickey. I mean, you know, give me a break. I mean, people make locks, and you know, they don't make them to be hidden Mickeys, but.
Sure, unless they're obviously a Mickey head-shaped lock.
My approach to the whole lock image is that if it's on Disney property, and by the way, some locks look more like Mickey's than others. And we talked about the Pirates of the Caribbean lock on the jail cell. That does not look really like Mickey. But there are other locks, actually, on the other side of the boat in Jack Sparrow's treasure room. On the cabinets at the back, there are locks on the cabinets that look more like Mickey than the jail cell lock. So, and again, I usually have people vote on the lock images and many of the questionable images. And if people like it as a hidden Mickey, then I'll put it in the book, because you know what? Disney didn't tell me about it. No Imagineer told me about it. It's not official. However, If people, especially if cast members like it, and some cast members talk about the locks
mm-hmm.
As hidden Mickeys, so it's okay. If people like it as a Mickey image, then we'll call it a hidden Mickey.
Sure.
Awesome. Before we get too far away from the website, you mentioned your website, which is a really good website. Something else you have on there, which is awesome, is you have a catalog.
Yes.
You can go to Steve's website, and you could go basically either by object or by land or by even different parks, and you could see different hidden Mickeys that are there, which is nice, which is a really nice way to kind of confirm what you think you saw.
Yes.
Type of thing.
Right. And you know, if it's not there and if it's a new one you've discovered, then there's a way to submit it to me for me to check out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and get other opinions about. So, you know, and you may have a new find. I mean, like I mentioned, there are new hidden Mickeys appearing all the time in all the parks around the world.
And as much as they're appearing, they're also disappearing, which we also consider a find. We actually did contact your website one time with a hidden Mickey that disappeared. And it was kind of a cool thing because it was the first hidden Mickey the kids had found, and they found it on their own, which was really cool. It was a Swiss Family Robinson table.
Yes.
Sure.
At the bottom, at the dinner where they eat.
Correct. When you look down from above, you could see that there were plates. And it was even cool because they had a hidden, we called it a hidden mini, because they had a pineapple at the top of the plate. So it almost looked like a bow on top of her head.
Ah, okay.
However, in one of our trips after that, we found out they rearranged the table and it was no longer there.
Correct.
So so one of our things is we got home and we emailed you to let you know.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, and even with new hidden Mickeys, I will often wait for a while because, a lot of them do not last. And so you can imagine, I mean, some of my favorite hidden Mickey finds are the ones that seem to be permanent, like the ones that are etched in cement. How can that go away?
Sure.
So, if you're talking about display window images or arrangements of objects that are loose, some of those images don't last. So I will tend to wait and see if the cast members maintain them.
Sure. Sure. One of our favorite floating hidden Mickeys, or actually, I shouldn't say floating. One of our favorite moving hidden Mickeys is the one in the Living Seas. They'll usually have one on the bottom somewhere. And that guy usually moves around.
Right. It often moves. And a good example of a loose hidden Mickey that's maintained is in the Japan Pavilion in World Showcase at Epcot. And on the right side of the Japan Pavilion, in a clearing in a bush, on the right side of the walkway, about halfway down the walkway, there's a set of three rocks that the cast members in Japan maintain it. I mean, they check it every day and to make sure it's there. So,
nice.
And it's a wonderful hidden Mickey, and I love the fact that they maintain it, because it's just great, and people love finding it.
Oh, sure. Steve,
do you have a favorite hidden Mickey?
Well, yeah, my current favorite, and it will probably remain so for a while, because it has special meaning to me in that, and let me preface this by saying that for a long time, up through the early 2000s, even Disney did not acknowledge hidden Mickeys. They wouldn't talk about hidden Mickeys.
Right.
And in 1998, when Animal Kingdom opened, Disney's Animal Kingdom Park, at a press event, one of the reporters asked, one of the Imagineers, are there hidden Mickeys that you can tell us about? And the response was, what are hidden Mickeys? So it's like, the subtle, not so subtle message there was, you know, we don't acknowledge hidden Mickeys. Let's talk about that. However, over the last 5 or 6 years, that all changed. And Imagineers now freely talk about hidden Mickeys. Cast members freely talk about hidden Mickeys. And at a press event before the new Fantasyland opened, a Disney representative was presenting to the press and showed a slide of the once a year Hidden Mickey. And she was very proud of this. It occurs once a year at noon on Mickey's birthday, November 18th, in the queue, in the inside queue of the Little Mermaid under the sea attraction in the new Fantasyland at the Magic Kingdom. At noon, the sun is in the right position to shine through holes in the ceiling, and it forms a three-circle light image Mickey on the lower part of the wall, on the left side of the queue. And supposedly, it only happens at noon on Mickey's birthday once a year in November.
That's
so Disney, the Disney management showed that slide to the press and were bragging about it. We're very proud of this Hidden Mickey. So that's my favorite one because, first of all, the Imagineers had to really study, you know, astronomy and, you know, where the sun was going to be every year at that time. And it took a lot of research to do that and to make it happen. And second of all, Disney was talking about it. It's like, we're proud of this. This, you know, we want the world to know about this great Hidden Mickey. So, yeah, currently that's my favorite one. And, you know, it's only been there twice now because that's how long the new Fantasyland has been open. Actually, the first time it was seen was just a soft opening. But, I haven't been able to be there to see it. However, people are there and they send me photos of it and they say, Steve, it's really here. This is great. So I think it's a wonderful Hidden Mickey. You know, it's a good sign that the science and art of the creation of Hidden Mickeys has come a long way in the last 20 years.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Now, how did you actually get started by putting the Hidden Mickeys together as a book? Like, where did that idea come from?
It was a long journey. I fell in love with writing a long time ago. I'm a medical professional, and I was writing research medical articles and chapters for textbooks and all that. And I discovered that I enjoyed writing because people would respond to me positively. They would say, oh, I read your article and it was great. And, you know, so I enjoyed that kind of feedback and it sort of bolstered me. And I already mentioned that I, you know, as a Disney nerd like you guys, I fell in love with Disney World and I read everything about Disney that I could over a period of several years. And I thought, well, and I became good at Disney World. I became good at navigating it, and I would take my family and friends there, and I thought, well, I'm going to write a touring guide for my friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote this touring guide book. That was my first book about Disney. It came out in 2001, and I was able to find a travel publisher who published it, and I updated it every year for 10 years until 2011. Until the Hidden Mickeys thing got so consuming. Hmm. And I think after the guidebook came out, the touring guidebook, it was just basically a guidebook. My publisher asked me, do you have any other ideas for Disney books? I mean, this is kind of fun. And I said, well, I've been collecting. I had a Hidden Mickeys file because during the 90s, when I was reading the Disney magazine and everything I could about Disney, I came across this Hidden Mickeys thing. And in fact, the first website that I was aware of that talked about Hidden Mickeys was in the early 1990s. And you can imagine websites back then were basic websites. I mean, sure. You know, just sort of
a lot of words.
Yeah.
Text.
Exactly. And it was two college students at Stetson University, which is north of Orlando, started posting hidden Mickeys, and this was in the early 1990s, and I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. So I kept a file of hidden Mickeys during the 90s, and I would go out and look for them at Disney World, and my publisher said, hey, let's see if we can make a book out of it. And so I organized the hidden Mickeys in each park as a sort of a scavenger hunt format, you know, as a an efficient way to find them. In other words, when you get to the Magic Kingdom, you don't look for Main Street Magic hidden Mickeys initially. You go to the major attractions first,
right?
And get them done so you can you don't have to wait in line all day, and then save the Main Street ones at a leisurely pace toward the end of the day. That's the kind of way the scavenger hunts are structured, and that's the way the books are. And so we made the Hidden Mickeys book. Again, the first one came out in 2003. And we found, by the way, there we talked about new and lost Hidden Mickeys. It's a fascinating law of the Disney universe. It's a physical law of the Disney universe that new Hidden Mickeys appear at a certain rate and lost Hidden Mickeys go away at a certain rate, such that it makes a new edition of the Hidden Mickeys books viable about every other year. In other words, there's enough new ones, enough lost ones to make a new book make sense. And so we've updated the books every other year since 2003 because of that great physical law of the Disney universe.
Now, I got to imagine that's got to require a lot of those research trips, right?
Oh, yes, once a week. And, you know, again, people email me daily, and I find one or two new, wonderful, great hidden Mickeys a month at Disney World, and a little less frequently at Disneyland, but they appear at Disneyland at a constant rate, too. And we're not talking about just new lands or new attractions. They can appear new ones at resorts, anywhere, shops. I don't know what happens with that. Maybe the manager or Imagineers just decide to, you know, put a new one in somewhere and just wait for people to find them. And, you know, it just makes the game so much fun that way.
So it could be an existing mural that they would just add a hidden Mickey to that mural.
Sometimes that happens. Often it's an arrangement of rocks or, you know, an etching in the cement, or it can be paint. You know, like in Disney's Hollywood Studios, people have been emailing me about one that they've seen near the Muppets 3D attraction. In the walkway, in the paint on the cement on the ground, you know, on the floor, the walkway.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't seen it before. I think it's new. I think the people that repaint all the time, they just put a new one in there. So, yeah,
so cool.
Yeah, it is cool, and I love that about Disney, because you just never know when a new one's going to pop up that you're going to see.
How many emails do you think you get a day, just on an average day, that you have to flip through and look at all these pictures? I imagine it gets laborious.
It's not that many per day. Maybe three or four a day.
Okay.
But sometimes it'll be like 20 at a time.
Gotcha.
And okay. So, you know, I mean, over the years, I've gotten to know people that are great hidden Mickey hunters, and you know, sometimes they're young people, but usually they're adults, and they, you know, they just scour Disney World and Disneyland and parks around the world. Really, I get emails from Paris and Hong Kong and all Tokyo, and people just look for hidden Mickeys, and they'll be on a hidden Mickey search for several days, for example, at Disney World. And I'll get 20 photos, and many of them new, that I didn't know about.
And so you have some people that will email you, like, you know these people.
If I there are certain people, if I see their name or their email, I know that these are serious Hidden Mickey hunters, and I better pay attention.
Wow.
And, you know, yes, over the years, and some of these people have been doing it for many years, 10 years, and, you know, and they're just continually doing it. So, yeah, it's just wonderful. And
that's incredible.
And, you know, they love Disney World like you and I do, and Disney property, and the Hidden Mickeys just add a level of entertainment and enjoyment to their trip.
Sure.
We have some listeners from the West Coast, California, and they go to Disneyland a lot. Is there one Hidden Mickey out in Disneyland that really stood out for you?
You know, Disneyland is a special, a very special park to all of us because Walt's imprint is really there. And when I go to Disneyland, I go two or three times a year to California. And that's the overwhelming impression I get and feeling and I get when I walk on the property is that, gosh, you know, Walt Disney himself, you know, walked these streets.
Right.
And some Hidden Mickeys were the, and by the way, Hidden Mickeys. The Hidden Mickey image is, I think, coming from sometimes from the subconscious of the Imagineer, the artist, especially the animator. If you look at some of the earliest Walt Disney cartoons from the late 30s and 40s, people have sent me images from those cartoons, you know, from smoke rings, from the cars, or, you know, circles in the water. And there will be a three-circle Mickey image there. And it's like, even back then, I think from their subconscious, they were thinking, they were drawing, right? They were drawing out of their subconscious and drawing, you know, crazily. And there, you know, out of their subconscious, they would draw a Mickey image. And I think it's a real Mickey image. It's, you know, they were drawing Mickey Mouse and, you know, from their creativity, subconscious came this three circle Mickey image because it looks pretty convincing to me. Now, of course, they didn't call them Hidden Mickeys back then, but anyway, you know what? Some of the best Hidden Mickeys at Disneyland are in the hotels, especially in the Grand Californian. Actually, all the hotels, but even in the lobby of the Grand Californian. If you go to the registration counter, there are some very subtle, small Hidden Mickeys along the relief sculpture of the registration counter. One of them is a what we call a conductor Mickey. It's a full body Mickey, and he's got a wand in his hand, and it's very difficult to see. You got to bend down to see it. There's a Tinkerbell there too, but if you ask the cast members, they'll show you where it is. That's probably my favorite Hidden Mickey at Disneyland right now.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm making my list here. Now, we discussed Steve and his books, and we just wanted to point out that there's a book for Walt Disney World, which is in its 6th edition. There is a book for Disneyland in its 4th edition, and there's also a book for the cruise ships. Now, yes. I know you don't live close enough to go on a cruise every week, so I got to imagine that you did take a couple cruises, though, right?
Oh, yes. I've cruised on all the ships, and, you know, the cruise ship Hidden Mickeys don't change all that much, and so they're a little more static and last a little bit longer because there's not as much renovation and change that go on the ships as there are in the parks.
Sure.
However, you know, the Magic was updated recently and updates do go on. And so I do have to, you know, check those out. Castaway Key. There's some great Hidden Mickeys on Castaway Key.
Oh, I got to imagine.
Yeah. So, the cruise ships have great Hidden Mickeys. Yep, they do. especially the Dream and Fantasy, the new ships. Sure. Wonderful hidden Mickeys.
Yeah, we can't wait to check them out the next time too. So, and it's so funny how subliminal it is as we're walking through Disney World or on the cruise ships or Castaway Key. You always in the back of your mind are looking for those three circles or for that shape.
Right.
Okay. Well, so we mentioned the books, but some of the other things that Steve has online are pretty cool too. He has a Facebook page for the books, and you have a really nice picture up on that Facebook page. Is that from the TV show The Middle? It's the little boy holding the hidden Mickey book, pointing at Mickey Mouse.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I that was completely. It took us all by surprise. Brick. The young boy in the middle, which is the ABC television show, in the credits after that episode, which is the episode where they went to Disney World, he is holding my book. And actually, I worked through Disney because I was so overwhelmed by this that I signed a book and mailed it to him. So... I don't know if he's going to respond to me or not, but anyway, I was just very, that took us all by surprise. Yes. And so that is Brick holding my book, sitting in the Magic Kingdom. And
that's incredible.
And you answered my question, I guess. My next question was, did they notify you beforehand or ask permission or anything like that? So I'm guessing no,
he didn't.
Did you see a boost in sales afterwards?
Oftentimes sales boost come a few months after. So, you know, obviously we'll look for that. What I'm really hoping is that, you know, and what we all hope with in the Disney bubble that we're in is that we get the word out about Disney. And so, I mean, how do you do that? How do you get to new audiences? And so that is one way is a lot of people that watch The Middle maybe have even never been to a Disney park, and they see Brick holding this book called Hidden Mickeys. Hopefully that'll spur some interest.
Right.
And and people on their next vacation, and you know, instead of their usual destination, well, let's go to Disneyland or Disney World. And so that's what I'm hoping happens is that it expands our Disney universe.
I think one of the real incredible things is that you kind of your book carries so much weight that you kind of burst that Disney bubble where your book's actually offered in the parks. I can't imagine that was easy. How did that come about? Did they approach you?
No. Well, the first Disney World book was published in 2003 by my travel publisher, and it was in bookstores, you know, Barnes and Noble and the usual brick and mortar bookstores on Amazon.
Sure.
Whenever Amazon got big, but I think it was early 2005 when Disney called. No, we didn't approach Disney. Disney, you know, you can approach Disney and say, you know, right. I got a book, can you sell it on property?
Right.
But, you know, that usually not going to work. So,
right.
But Disney called us and asked if they could sell the book on property. And of course we, after we, picked ourselves up off the floor, yeah, of course you can sell it on property. So yeah, that was purely from Disney. And hopefully it'll continue. I mean, I'm just loving it.
That almost goes hand in hand with what you said before about Disney being more forthcoming with the hidden Mickeys. This was probably just part of that whole process.
It may have been. You're right. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, because that, again, that happened about 2005.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be. Yep. I mean, for you, it had to be a complete kind of justification of what you were doing.
Oh, yes.
All that time.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's reassuring enough and to see any of your books in a bookstore, but to see my Hidden Mickeys book on Disney property, yeah, that is just unbelievable. I still walk up to, you know, a gift shop, you know, like the Writer's Stop in Hollywood Studios. They usually have my book in there. And I'll just stand there and see if anybody picks my book up. I'll say, hey, I'll sign it for you if you buy it.
I actually picked one. You know, it's other than doing the podcast, I have a small travel agency on the side. And any of the people, usually when somebody books a trip with me, I'll give them a guidebook or something. But if it's somebody that's been before, I always give them a Hidden Mickey book. Well, I give them your book. And but I actually didn't have, we just went in April, and I didn't have one with me. And I actually purchased one in Mexico in Epcot because my daughter was so enamored by the Hidden Mickey. So I bought her a book while we were there.
Awesome. Well,
I didn't see you lurking around.
I'd like to meet you in Disney World and sign your book for you.
That'd be fantastic. Honored.
Well, and before we get too far away from it, too, I wanted to mention, I noticed you had a really cool blog on your website, the hiddenmickeyguy.com website, and I noticed you write most of your blog posts under a ghostwriter's name, Vicky. I was wondering if you can explain that a little bit.
Well, Vicky's my wife. She does the social media part of the Hidden Mickey's website. She does Twitter and Facebook, and she does the blogs, and I review the blogs, but she basically works on the blogs every day, and that's what she does. So she, if you see a blog on the homepage, it's probably her who's written it.
Right. I just I read the one about the opening of Disneyland just the other day.
Sure.
And really, really nice blog post. Awesome pictures. I don't think I've seen a couple of those pictures, so that was very cool.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, we have iPhone and Android apps, Hidden Mickeys for Disney World and Disneyland, different apps. And it's very interesting about the apps because we have some good app developers that we like, and they did a great job the first time around, and they still are. But when Apple updated the iPhone app firmware, software, whatever it is, last fall, I think it threw a wrench into a lot of app developers, and our app guys are are really struggling to update the Hidden Mickey's apps on the iPhone to make it a high level first class app. And I think it has to do with the changes Apple made. So they actually have a website, hiddenmickeysapp.com, that they keep people apprised on what they're doing. But I think it's going to be a spectacular update. They're really working hard at it. But I think Apple company made it difficult to update the iPhone apps.
Sure.
That's a shame. I thought that was one of the best parts about those apps, was that you pretty much can kind of develop them and put them out there pretty quickly and kind of use them right away. It's a shame if they make it.
I thought so too, but, and the Android's a little easier, but, you know, the Android format. But the iPhone, you know, Apple does some funny things sometimes. So right.
Well, that's the name of the game for Apple from day one.
Right.
But well, hopefully we'll see some updates on that then down the road. Awesome.
Yeah, it should be soon, and I think it's going to be a fantastic update on the iPhone app.
Now, Steve, before we end, can you give us your website again and how would people get in touch with you?
HiddenMickeyGuy.com is my website. And if you want to submit a Hidden Mickey, there's a submit button to submit, a description or ideally a description with a photo of a Hidden Mickey image. And by the way, I have parts of my website that have to do with animals and, you know, Hidden Mickeys in movies and TV shows. So there's it's not just Disney parks.
Yeah, that's cool.
There are hidden Mickeys all over the place.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed at some of the animal hidden Mickeys. Like, you know, one of my favorites is Minnie Moo, who used to, you know, live at Disney World.
Right, the cow.
Yep.
Yeah, the cow who had a Mickey on her side. But anyway, people can submit to my website, or they can. There's a way to contact me directly, and write me a message. So, and I respond to everybody who writes me. I like to respond to people directly.
Right, and I can vouch for that. You replied back to us and gave us what you thought about what our hidden Mickey we said that disappeared. So awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Steve. We really appreciate you spending some time with us tonight and talking hidden Mickeys.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for show number 43. Thanks for listening. One more time, thanks again goes out to Steve Barrett for coming on our show. We really appreciate that, Steve. If you want to get in touch with the show, email us at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com. Also, check out the Facebook page for the Disney Nerds Podcast and the Disney Nerds Group. So that's it for this show, and we'll see you next week. Gungaloosh!